So we're on this journey through Genesis, and we're looking at a number of stories. And they're stories of what God is up to, but also stories of what people are up to. And sometimes the people in Genesis do things we want our kids to imitate, and sometimes not. In fact, if we're honest, some of the stories in Genesis, and really some of the stories we read in the Bible, aren't very edifying. For example, in Genesis 34, there's the violation of Dinah, one of Jacob's daughters, and then the clever but very violent response of her brothers. We find this story in Genesis 34. But I'm not preaching on that today. And you might be glad because it's kind of a quirky, odd, difficult text, and you might be glad we're not going to dive into it until you find out what I am going to speak on, and then you might wish I was talking about Dinah. Because we're going to go the opposite end of the spectrum of a story like that. This morning, we're going to look at lists of names and numbers. Now, you didn't groan outwardly because you're polite Sunday morning people, but inwardly, you're groaning right now. You're like, what in the world could there be possibly edifying about lists of names and numbers? I mean, that has to feel like the least inspirational part of the Old Testament, except for maybe all those parts about skin diseases and bodily fluids. That might be slightly worse. I mean, when you open your Bible app and it gives you a verse for the day, it gives you something like Philippians 4:13, right? I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And you're like, yes! Or it gives you Matthew 11:28, come to me all you who are weary and burdened and I will give you rest. And you're like, yes, I can use that. You don't get a verse usually from 1 Chronicles. In fact, I need you guys to help me with something. This is really easy. I need a number between 1 and 12.
Seven.
Thank you, Chandler. Very good. Very loud and confident. I love it. Well, I got seven already. We can use eight next time. The next sermon, we could do eight and would be no problem. Because every chapter from 1 Chronicles 1 to 12, thankfully, thank you for not saying 10, because 10 is the one exception, will give you a verse like this. I'll just start at the beginning of 1 Chronicles 7. The sons of Issachar, Tola, Puah, Jashub, and Shimron, four in all. The sons of Tola, Uzzi, Raphiah, Jeriel, Jamai, Ibsam, and Samuel, and on it goes. You don't see that stitched on a pillow, do you? No, that's not going to be hanging on somebody's wall. But something like half of the words and the verses in 1 Chronicles are just names. What's up with that? Who thought it was worth scripture space to tell us, as we read one of my favorites later in 1 Chronicles, that among the Levites serving at the temple were the sons of Merari, Mahli and Mushi. And if you're not sure that, Anna, you can look me up. You can check me out. It's 1 Chronicles 23:21. No, I love it. First service, they didn't really respond. I don't know if they weren't awake. They didn't think it was funny. I think Mushi's an awesome name. I mean, who names their kid Mushi? Apparently Merari did, because 1 Chronicles 23:21 tells us that. Now, if you're like me, every time you come across said kind of list, you skim over it, right? Because first of all, it doesn't feel like it has any real spiritual value. And then let's be honest, it's hard to say some of these names. You don't even know what they mean. You don't even know how to pronounce them. But there's got to be a reason. There are dozens upon dozens, upon dozens, upon dozens of obscure names in the Bible. What is God trying to do through all of these random seeming names? Well, I think he's trying to tell us he's up to something. And if you stick with me today, we're going to go from Genesis to Revelation with some stops along the way. And it's going to be less than a half hour. You can time me, especially from this point forward. It will definitely be less than a half hour. But I think from beginning to end, it will be less than a half hour. All with the purpose of showing you that in the names of the Bible, and also with one specific number, God is up to something. He's not simply giving us doctrine in this book. This is not, despite what I just did, the goal of the Bible isn't to open to some random passage and start reading. The goal is to understand that this is a story from beginning to end of a God who pursues people, who finds fresh ways to connect with us and draw us into his family, into the very story that God is writing. And yes, that story begins in Genesis, works its way through 1 Chronicles and 2 Chronicles, and on into the New Testament, with folks like Mary and Mark and Peter and Phoebe and Philip. And it's a story that continues with folks like you and me today, with Danny, with Derek, with Shirley, with Sydney, with CJ, with Quinn, with Caroline. Yes, you, Caroline. Includes you too. Sorry, I called you out, didn't I? And Addie too, because Addie, I can't ignore you and say Caroline, right? I'm going to embarrass one of you. I should embarrass both of you, shouldn't I? But it includes you guys and all of us who come to be a part of the story of God. And the beauty of it is none of us have any extra claim to that, right? We all claim it only because of the grace of God. That's the point of this book. Grace starts with God calling Abraham and his wife Sarah, and then he gives them a son, Isaac. And then Isaac and Rebekah have twin boys, Jacob and Esau. And of course, God chooses the schemer of the two, as Arnest pointed out last week, the wrestler, the conniver. He chooses Jacob to bless, and through him, he brings 12 sons. Now, if this was a smaller setting, we would kind of see if we could together remember the 12 sons of Jacob, but I won't make you do that. We're just going to look at the list as it's found in Genesis chapter 35. Genesis 35, I'm going to start at the very end of verse 22. Jacob had 12 sons, the sons of Leah: Reuben, the firstborn of Jacob; Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun. The sons of Rachel: Joseph and Benjamin. The sons of Rachel's servant Bilhah: Dan and Naphtali. The sons of Leah's servant Zilpah: Gad and Asher. These were the sons of Jacob who were born to him in Padan Aram. Now, of course, it's just a list, right? Easy to skip over. You're like, it's the 12 boys of Jacob. All right, let's move on. Except when you look at the list, you realize there's some stories here, right? There's some things that we can refresh our memory with. First of all, we can't help but notice, because the author makes it really clear, there are 12 sons by 4 women. I had one son with one woman, and that was plenty for me. Jacob wins in that battle. But then you go a little further and you realize that Leah was the first one mentioned. And she also was not Jacob's first choice. And yet Leah has 6 of the 12 boys, including the firstborn. Wonder if God's up to something there, possibly. Then, of course, those 6 boys of Leah, along with their 6 brothers from the other 3 mothers, will go on to become the 12 tribes of Israel. The 12 families that God will choose and use and bless beyond anything they could deserve or begin to imagine. But there's one more thing from this list that isn't really in this list, but it points to another list that I want you to see, and that's in Genesis 46. Genesis 46, verses 19 through 21, it's embedded in another long list. Let me just read you these 3 verses. The sons of Jacob's wife Rachel: Joseph and Benjamin. In Egypt, Manasseh and Ephraim were born to Joseph by Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. The sons of Benjamin: Bela, Beker, Ashbel, Gera, Naaman, Ehi, Rush, Muppam, Huppam, and Ard. I just read verse 21 because I wanted to say Muppam, Huppam, and Ard. I have nothing spiritual to say about them. Other than I love that Beaker, who was one of my favorite Muppet characters, is also here too. It just seems appropriate. I don't even know what to do with that. Back on track. Verses 19 and 20 is where I want to be. Because it describes that Joseph has these 2 sons. And it's easy to miss, but do you notice who the mom is? She's an Egyptian woman, daughter of an Egyptian priest. Ephraim and Manasseh, these 2 boys are half Egyptian and half Hebrew. God is up to something. But we're not done yet. Just turn the page to chapter 48, verses 3 and 4. Jacob, Joseph's dad, is about to die, and Joseph comes to him with these 2 boys, Ephraim and Manasseh, and listen to what Jacob says. God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan, and there he blessed me and said to me, I'm going to make you fruitful and increase your numbers. I will make you a community of peoples, and I will give this land as an everlasting possession to your descendants after you. Jacob says, God has promised to make me a community of peoples. I think it's interesting. I don't want to stretch it too far, but it's not just people. It's not just one little small minority ethnic group. He's got more in mind, and we see that in the next verse, verse 5. Jacob says, now then, your two sons born to you in Egypt before I came to you here will be reckoned as mine. Ephraim and Manasseh will be mine, just as Reuben and Simeon are mine. Do you hear what Jacob is saying very clearly? He is saying these half and half boys, these outsiders born in Egypt, they are mine. They are Jacob's sons now as much as Reuben, his firstborn. They are my sons. God is up to something. And so Ephraim and Manasseh become two of the 12 tribes. They basically take the place of their father Joseph. The son Levi becomes, the Levites who serve in the temple. So the 12 tribes become basically the 11 sons. And then you throw these two boys in from Joseph. But it's even more interesting than that. At least I think it is. Because Ephraim becomes then almost a description of who Israel is. Look at Jeremiah chapter 31. In this wonderful chapter about God's plan to bring his people back from exile, listen to what he says, what God says in Jeremiah 31, 8 and 9. See, I will bring them from the land of the north and gather them from the ends of the earth. Among them will be the blind and the lame, expectant mothers and women in labor. A great throng will return. They will come with weeping. They will pray as I bring them back. I will lead them beside streams of water on a level path where they will not stumble, because I am Israel's father and Ephraim is my firstborn son. Ephraim has gone from being Joseph's boy from an Egyptian woman to being Jacob's boy to being God's firstborn son. That's what God does. Even in the Old Testament, if you just read it, you see God has this plan. He has this powerful plan to make a people. And it's so much bigger than what's happening in that moment. God is seeing forward to a plan that, of course, will come more fully clear in Jesus. Because when Jesus comes, what's one of the first things he does? He gathers around him a group of followers. And this will be the easiest question you get in church all day. How many followers does Jesus gather around him to call his disciples? It's 12. 12 boys of Jacob, now 12 disciples of Jesus. It is definitely not a coincidence. That number 12 is intentional. Jesus is clearly continuing the work of God, forming a new family of God. And we see this in Mark chapter 3, starting in verse 13. Jesus went up on a mountainside, and he called to him those he wanted, and they came to him. He appointed 12 that they might be with him and that he might send them out to preach and have authority to drive out demons. These are the 12 he appointed: Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. To them he gave the name Boanerges, which means sons of thunder, Andrew, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, son of Alphaeus, Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. Jesus calls these guys onto a mountain. I think it's a clear echo of Moses, who Moses goes up and he comes down from the mountain to give the law of God. Jesus calls them up to the mountain because Jesus is a greater Moses. Moses came down from the mountain in Exodus 24 and he built 12 pillars to represent the 12 tribes of Israel. Jesus calls 12 men up the mountain to say, you will be representative of the new family of God. And so these 12 will go and be that. And look what he calls them to do. If you're in Mark 3, look at what he calls them to do. First of all, he calls them to be with him. I love that because that's where it starts for every one of us. It starts where we are called to be with Jesus. Second, he says to go share about him. And then third, to drive out demons. To take the power of God through the family of God to every God-forsaken and Satan-infested place on this planet, God is sending us. It's still the model for us today. We could preach a whole nother sermon on that, to be with God, to share that love, and to go and to take that love and that spirit of his power to every corner of this planet. We still are called to do that today. But notice where the 12 go. To do that, we have to go back to Matthew. Notice where Matthew describes the 12 going. After Matthew gives us the list of the 12 in Matthew 10, these are the words Jesus immediately says to them. Let's pick it up in Matthew 10, verse 5. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions. Do not go among the Gentiles or enter any town of the Samaritans. Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. As you go, proclaim this message. The kingdom of heaven has come near. Heal the sick. Raise the dead. Cleanse those who have leprosy. Drive out demons. Freely you have received. Freely give. The 12 start with the 12. The 12 disciples start with the 12 tribes of Israel. Jesus makes that very clear. Don't go to the Gentiles, he says. Don't go to the Samaritans and, you know, kind of their halfway efforts at historic Judaism. He says, don't go there. Go to the 12. But as you know, if you know this story, that's only the beginning. That's not where they end. That's only where they start. For after Jesus' death and resurrection and return to the Father, this family of 12 is given the mission to carry the kingdom forward. And after they see Jesus off, as it were, they head back to Jerusalem. And in the book of Acts, chapter 1, verse 13, Luke lists their names. And I don't think it's an accident, because Luke gives us their name in Acts 1, 13, because we can't help but notice there are now only 11. Judas, of course, is off the scene and out of the picture. And so we have 11. It's as if it's like God's family and God's plan. Is it going to last? Jesus has just gone back to be the Father. The people are left behind, and they're just 11. What are they going to do? Are they going to make it? Are they going to continue the plan of God? But first on the agenda, as Peter gets up in front of the group, is to replace Judas and become the 12 again. I don't think that's a coincidence. It's very clear that God is going to continue the plan through the 12. And so that's what they do. But also, as a reminder, if I were to ask you who the 12th one was, could you name the 12th apostle? Matthias, thank you. I mean, some of us would know that. Many of us maybe wouldn't, because, frankly, he's not known. I think he maybe gets one more mention. I'm not even sure about that in the New Testament. Matthias fades off the scene because it's not about Matthias. It's about God's plan to form the 12, because the number isn't magical. It's God's purpose, and it's for us to see God is still up to something. In fact, if you look in Acts 1, I'm not going to read it directly, but if you look in Acts 1, Luke has this little throwaway line where he says it's the 11 become the 12, but in total, he says there are about 120 followers of Jesus. I don't want to stretch that number too far, but if I do the math, I'll show you here on the screen. If you do the math, and I'm not a math genius, but I think all you have to do is add a 0 to 12 to get to 120. Do we have that slide? You know, like, I'm not a math teacher for probably really good reasons. But I think that's 12 times 10, right? Someone correct me? You guys are smart. 12 times 10 is 120? Exactly. So God is up to something. This new family of God is 12, 10 times over. But of course, by the end of Acts 2, it will be thousands as people from many parts of the world come to faith in Jesus. In fact, because this is a sermon about lists, how could we overlook Acts 2, where Luke gives us the descriptions of where all these folks have come from that are coming to Jesus? Let me pick it up in Acts 2:9. Parthians, Medes, and Elamites, residents of Mesopotamia, Judea, and Cappadocia, Pontus, and Asia, Phrygia and Pamphylia, Egypt and the parts of Libya near Cyrene, visitors from Rome, both Jews and converts to Judaism, Cretans and Arabs. Man, there are some places in that list that we're like, I have no idea where that is. And there are some places that are as fresh as this morning's news. And God is saying, that's where I'm forming a people from. Places you and I have heard of and places we've never heard of. Because that's the point. That's what God is up to. What was 12 becomes 12x10, becomes thousands of people from all around the world coming to Jesus. There's one more book we got to look at. And it's a book where the number 12 just jumps off the pages because it's a book about numbers and symbolism. It's, of course, the book of Revelation. It's a book where we get a ton of lists. Revelation chapter 7, verse 4 says this: "Then I heard the number of those who were sealed, 144,000 from all the tribes of Israel." And I'm going to spare you from reading verses 5, 6, 7, and 8 because it just lists all the tribes again with the number 12,000. 12 times 12,000, math geniuses, is 144,000. Now, if we were to read the list, we would notice that Ephraim is actually not on this list. He puts Joseph in place there. You can look if you're in Revelation 7. Check me. So instead of Ephraim, we get Joseph. I'm not sure what that tells me, but it does tell me that the ultimate reality is not about the specific list of names, as it is about the fact that the number 12 shows up again, 12 times 12,000, because God is continuing his faithful plan. God is showing that he is still doing a work, forming a family. And of course, because he's giving us this list of the tribes of Israel, he's not saying specifically these specific tribes are the only people that are going to be there. It's not going to just be 144,000. If you've been with me through this sermon, or if you read Revelation at all, you may not understand a lot about it, but clearly he's being symbolic about what God is up to and tracking with the number 12 that goes all the way back to Genesis 35. Perhaps this is a good reminder through all of this, that number reminds us that God is behind it all along the way. People may change, and we do. People may fail God, and we do. People may try to turn against God's plan, and we do. But God's plan cannot be stopped. God is at work. The number 12 doesn't change because God doesn't change. As he grows his family, he takes that number 12, 120, 144,000, I think are all symbolic reminders that God has reached a place where you and I are sitting here 2,000 years after Jesus, and we are a part of this great story of God. And if you're not, this is his invitation to you. He wants you to be a part of his story. There is no story like the story of God. You can try to write your own story. Good luck with that. You can try to take the script of the world, and I don't know about you, but it doesn't take but 3 minutes looking at the world to realize the world has lost its way. But when we follow the script that God gives us, when we follow the story, it invites us in to a place where he gives us meaning and purpose and direction, and he gives us eternal hope. And we see that at the end of Revelation. It's how the book ends. It's how the Bible ends. Let me pick it up in Revelation 21, verse 9. "One of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues came and said to me, 'Come, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb.' And he carried me away in the spirit to a mountain great and high and showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. It shone with the glory of God, and its brilliance was like that of a very precious jewel, like a jasper clear as crystal." Now, the one thing I want you to notice from this, there's no number 12 here, it's not a list, but I had to read this because it's a great description of what the church is, but it's all symbolic language because he says it's a bride in one verse, and in the next verse, he says it's a city. It's a bride that's a city that's a bride. Clearly symbolic language trying to describe what God is doing. But when he calls it a city, he gives himself the understanding to go back into these numbers and back into these lists. Let's pick it up in verse 12. "This city had a great high wall with," hey, shocking, 12 gates, "and with 12 angels at the gates. On the gates were written the names of the 12 tribes of Israel." Huh, didn't see that coming. "There were three gates on the east, three on the north, three on the south, three on the west." That was sarcasm, by the way. "The wall of the city had 12 foundations," surprise, surprise, "and on them were the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb." The foundation of the city is the number 12. God is up to something. And then the 12 come together. The 12 tribes of Israel, the 12 apostles form the very structure of the city of God. And the city of God is us, the church, the bride of Christ. But John's vision is not over. Wait, there's more. He's got more 12s to mention and another list. Yippee. because an angel comes to measure this bride city, and it's laid out like a square. And wouldn't you know it, the measurements are 12,000 by 12,000 by 12,000. Stadia is the form of measurement, but that's not really what's important. It's the fact that it's 12,000 cubed. It is a perfect 12 times 1,000 cubed over. This is the city of God. And if we've been paying attention, even if you've been half paying attention, you should be with me to go, wow, that shows God's plan is going to finally come to full completion in this perfect city of God. Even down to the depths of the walls, which are 144 cubits thick. Math teachers, what's 144? 12 times 12. And then we read in verses 19 and 20, there are a number of jewels that decorate the walls of the city. Anybody want to take a wild guess how many jewels are in the wall of the city? Maybe 12? Yes. Bingo. 12 jewels in the gate of the city. So, the church eternal is a city where God's plan for the 12 becomes 120, becomes 144,000 in a city 12,000 by 12,000 by 12,000 with walls 144 thick, which then become an uncountable multitude of every tongue, tribe, people, and nation. You see, as it turns out, names and numbers do matter because they point to the consistency and dependability of God's plan. With a number 12, it's not magical, it's not mystical, it's fundamental, it's foundational. What starts as 12 sons becomes the people of Israel. What starts as 12 apostles becomes the people of God and a family that includes us that will one day gather around the throne of God and of the Lamb who makes all these things possible. Jesus, the slain Lamb, who is also the Good Shepherd. The Lamb who makes a family through his death and then seals our hope forever through his resurrection. This is the promise of the 12. I could stop there, but there's one last mention of the 12, and you would not forgive me if I didn't tell you, right? You couldn't go home left hanging. So let me give you that one more. It's Revelation 22, 1 through 5. Then the angel showed me the river of the water of life as clear as crystal flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb down the middle of the great street of the city. On each side of the river stood the tree of life bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month. How many months are there? 12. What a shocker. And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. No longer will there be any curse. Gosh, we could preach a sermon just on those words. The throne of God and of the Lamb will be in the city, and his servants will serve him. They will see his face. His name will be on their foreheads. There will be no more night. They will not need the light of a lamp or the light of the sun, for the Lord God will give them light, and they will reign forever and ever. And so the final 12 we see is the final promise that we need, that in this city is a tree. And every month, every one of the 12 months, it gives fruit for the healing of the nations, for the healing of the peoples, for the healing of you and me. So what we say in this church every Sunday, we say 12 times over and over and over and over again. And it's a message that you should take with you every month of the 12 months that you live and every day of your life is a message that we are a people of hope. We are a people that God has formed into family. We are a people that God has called to himself. We are a people who are then sent into this world because we are first with him, and then we go and share him with a world that desperately needs to know what God has embedded in the pages of this book. That through that number 12, every point along the way, he shows us that he's got a plan, that he's going to take care of us. And even if right now, which I think it's true, we live in this in-between place, right? Where, you know, maybe it feels like we live in the season of 11, right? Where we're not quite there to completion of 12, because we're not. We live in this world, this broken and hurting world, where we could go around this room, and if we had time and if we were honest enough, every single one of us could share something that is hurting or broken or struggling or difficult or challenging for us or someone we love dearly. And what this book reminds me, what the number 12 reminds me, is that God has brought our healing. We taste it now. We know it now through Jesus. We know it through his Spirit who is present with us. But one day when he comes again, when Jesus returns, all we will know is that healing. All we will know is that hope. And that will be our life and our joy and our hope and our healing and our promise forever. This is the promise of the 12. This is what we get to live for. Even so, Lord Jesus, come quickly.